Welcome to Paradise Found. I'm sure many listeners have read or have heard about the famous book, Paradise Lost, from the 17th century English poet John Milton. It is an epic poem in blank verse. The poem concerns the biblical story of the fall of man, the temptation of Adam and Eve by Satan, and the expulsion from the Garden of Eden. In this podcast, I present a viewpoint claiming the story of Adam and Eve is allegorical, and the paradise of Eden is a metaphor for the entire earth. So next time you are in your favorite place, close your eyes and imagine a paradise. Then open your eyes and realize that you have found it. Then consider what is causing our entire planet to not be a paradise. You will conclude the obvious, which is all the negative, evil actions of many, many, many people as the root cause. It's time to start working together, maximizing unity and expanding on the subject by discussing realistic and effective solutions. You can find more information in the directory of all my podcasts as they are released under my website for my book with the same title at www.paradisefoundbook.com. The book is divided into 12 chapters named after the months of the year with four podcast episodes per chapter.
Of man's first disobedience, and the fruit of that forbidden tree, whose mortal taste brought death into the world and all our woe with loss of Eden, till one greater man restore us and regain the blissful seat. Sing, heavenly muse, that on the secret top of Oreb or of Sinai didst inspire that shepherd who first taught the chosen seed in the beginning how the heavens and earth rose out of chaos? Or of Zion Hill delight thee more, and Siloah's brook that flowed fast by the oracle of God? I thence invoke thy aid to my adventurous song, that with no middle flight intends to soar above the Anonian mount, while it pursues things unattempted yet in prose or rhyme. And chiefly thou, O Spirit, that dost prefer before all temples the upright heart and pure, instruct me. For thou knowest, thou from the first wast present, and with mighty wings outspread, dove-like sat'st brooding on the vast abyss, and mad'st it pregnant. What in me is dark, illumine. What is low, raise and support, that to the height of this great argument I may assert eternal providence and justify the ways of God to men.
Welcome to Paradise Found, and this is April, week number 2, and the title of this episode is Our Paradise Was Never Lost. What you just heard was a recording of Ian Richardson reading the beginning of the book Paradise Lost by John Milton. When I first got the idea for my book, the title I chose was Protect Our Paradise of Earth, and I realized that the book would incorporate a lot of philosophical and spiritual questions, so it just seemed so natural to somehow relate it to this famous book. At the time, I really did not know very much about this book. But what I found out is that Milton was a very high, theologically educated man, and he expanded on the story of Adam and Eve with a great deal of meanings about God, heaven and hell, Satan, evil, and the relationship of Adam and Eve. What I want to focus on is the Garden of Eden and claim that it represents the entire earth. He clearly was a genius, and there was clearly really a lot of depth in this book about humanity and the meaning of the story of Adam and Eve. He's sort of like a William Shakespeare tackling this biblical story. Keep in mind that the story of Adam and Eve is just three short chapters in the book of Genesis. In the first chapter, God creates the earth in 6 days, and this includes creating all the people and all the animals. I believe the 6 days timeline was in God time, probably equal to 60 million years of our time. Then, chapter 2, he creates the Garden of Eden of Earth to the east and mentions several rivers like the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers flowing through it. And Bible scholars believe it was located where the ancient Tower of Babel was constructed and near Abraham's home and city of Ur. Again, I argue that the story of Adam and Eve is allegorical, and the story which was handed down by God in Eden is a metaphor for the entire earth. I wanted to try and write a book which would expand further on the meaning of the story of Adam and Eve and the Paradise of Eden. Milton obviously felt the same way. Perhaps claiming the story is allegorical is wrong, and more accurately, Adam and Eve began in a sort of metaphysical world, and it was located on Earth, and they were invisible to the people on Earth at that time. But whatever the case, nowhere in the Bible does it say that Eve is subordinate to Adam, and she was created from Adam's rib. This is why I believe Eden was sort of in a metaphysical world, and God created the female spirit of Eve to be Adam's companion. And there were already men and women in the physical universe, which God commanded to multiply and fill the earth. So I believe it's a huge misconception to think that Adam and Eve were the first two human beings, rather that they were sort of the first power couple who would set the stage for how humanity was to proceed and become civilized. But the concept of where they came from, this beautiful Garden of Eden, was obviously meant to represent our beautiful planet Earth. So what I thought I would do is read this summary from YouTube, which I found an educational series called Course Hero. And you can search this on Paradise Lost Summary to find it. I didn't catch the name of the woman that narrates this film, but there's a video that's animated, and it really does a good job of summarizing each of the 12 books that make up Paradise Lost. I shortened some of the summaries up a bit, not to make this episode too long, but after each summary, I try to relate it to what may have already actually happened when God created the earth, and that Eden is symbolic of it. I couldn't think of a better way to unify people who believe in science and those who believe in the Bible. They must both be relevant, explaining the human condition. In the first book, Satan and his followers are cast out of heaven and thrown into hell, and then Satan proclaims it is better to reign in hell rather than to serve in heaven, and pledge to wage an eternal war against the tyranny of heaven. They find out that God plans to create a new colony, which is Eden, and Satan creates a colony in hell called Pandemonium. This is where they plot their next moves. I believe that God created the earth in order for humanity to develop people who would become enlightened. He had no patience for spiritual entities who did not accept his rule, and his rule is nothing more than but being able to be focused on the power of love, and you cannot have any desire or temptations for material desires. Satan and his followers did just that. They desired to do things themselves, and they were not happy simply loving and existing in heaven with God. Many people do not believe in creation, and they prefer the theory of evolution to explain the origin of man. In November's chapter, I tackle that question, and I argue that both may have existed. Makes sense that the earth was forming, life would have been tested with many species, the dinosaurs would be wiped out from an asteroid, and then mankind would begin to develop or evolve. It was critical for people to be able to become enlightened and to know God, and was to overcome struggles, one of which was to defeat evil and the ways of Satan and his followers. So in book 2, Satan is now uplifted and exalted as the king of the kingdom of hell. He proclaims that he will not give up on his beef with God. He puts the question to his followers whether they should go out an all-out war or a covert guile against the tyranny of God's rule. Moloch first speaks out and calls for open war. Belial argues that in time, God must remit his anger and counsels against both force and guile. Mammon argues they should stay put and live free, accountable to none. Beelzebub argues that there'll be no place as long as they remain enslaved. He says that there must be an easier way than war, and should they seek out a new place God has created for man. This may be the way to resist and disrupt, and they may seduce man to their side. Satan offers himself to find the place where man resides, and then he attempts to leave hell and is confronted by 9 gates, which he ushers to help the two of the followers who are able to unlock the gates, and he escapes and he goes to the earth. If it's true we do not have a spiritual, if it's true that we do have a spiritual existence, then it makes sense that to me that some of us would not be happy existing and having an abiding by God, who would think of us as who we would think of as a tyrant. But God is not a tyrant. He's like a leader in a communist or socialist regime. He simply requires that you are spiritually enlightened with the energy of love. Every living thing may have a spiritual existence living within it. It probably is not restricted to human beings, which I believe are the highest level of spirituality. This is why I believe it is a tragedy if someone is murdered because he or she is nearing the end of the education to become enlightened. I believe these spiritual entities simply return to the metaphysical world we call hell and then become reincarnated for another shot to become enlightened. If you live your life and do not become enlightened, then the memory of your life is completely erased, and so you do in fact perish. But if you live a righteous life, harness the power of love, and then go on to the next stage, your memory of your life remains with you for eternity. In December's chapter titled Good Defeats Evil, I explained that Satan and his followers are basically refuse to harness the energy of love, and God is all power over them, but allows them to remain because they are part of reality. They serve the purpose to provide struggles and temptations to humanity in order to provide the necessary learning process of enlightenment. I feel that God knows this reality of the anarchy of the physical universe. Atoms and molecules are going to do what they are going to do, but the spiritual power of love is able to control it. It's simply part of nature to have evil, and Satan is the ruler of that world. Book number 3 of Paradise Lost resumes with God, with Jesus by his side. It says the Son, but I'm just assuming it's Jesus, looking down on Adam and Eve, and they watch Satan make his way to the earth. God tells Jesus that mankind will fall because he is free to fall, and without such freedom, there will be no true allegiance of constant love. He tells Jesus that predestination does not overrule human will. They themselves decree their own revolt, not I. God declares man shall find grace. Jesus asks God, how can there be such mercy can align with judgment? Sacrifice to pay the debt is the answer. Jesus offers himself as ransom for man's sin, and God is pleased. God says that although humanity will suffer from man's choices, humans who obey God will be redeemed from the act of his son's sacrifice. Then Satan makes his way up the stairway of heaven. Funny, but I actually never really knew the meaning behind Led Zeppelin's song Stairway to Heaven, and it's basically about this materialistic woman who thinks she can buy her way to heaven. And Roger Plant always hated singing that song. It's amazing how kind of dumb I really, you know, feel how much we really like, love these songs, but we really just like the, you know, the music and didn't really take the words so seriously. But anyway, continuing on with the book, there's an angel, Uriel, guarding the gate. Satan disguises himself as a cherub. You've probably seen those little statues of babies with wings. That's a cherub. Satan is curious to see that the land of God has created out of chaos. Uriel lets him to the paradise where Adam lives. So Milton has the entrance is through the gate of heaven. So again, I believe the story is allegorical and the characters are real in a metaphysical world. God is creating the earth for humanity, and in order for Satan to exist upon it, he must use deceptive ways to have influence on humanity. I believe God welcomes Satan and his followers to influence humanity so that people who learn to overcome struggles and resist temptations become enlightened. For example, the book of Job, where Job goes through many Satan-inflicted struggles. And then at the end, he wins. Book number 4 of Paradise Lost starts with Satan gazing down on Eden, overcome with doubt and despair and bitter memory of what he was. He thinks about his relationship with God and wonder if there's any way of space for redemption and pardon. But he realized that he will never submit and resolve anew to hold with his evil. He then disguises himself as a bird and flies into the tree of life to get a better view of the blissful, idyllic Garden of Eden. He sees Adam and Eve hand in hand, noble and godlike. This mark of God's favor strengthens his resolve to tempt them and deliver them to woe. Satan then gets closer to overhear their conversation. Adam reminds Eve that their only rule is not to eat from the tree of knowledge, and it has pronounced it to death to taste from that tree. Eve agrees, reliving her first memories of how a voice directed her to Adam of saying, "Of him you are, his flesh, his bones." But first she is transfixed by her own reflection in a pool. Eve then remembers what Adam first told her. "Do give thee being I lent out of my side to thee, nearest my heart, substantial to life, to have thee by my side henceforth, an individual solace dear." At this, their conversation turns to a congenital delight. Envious of their pure love, Satan resolves to seduce them with forbidden fruit. Meanwhile, Uriel suspects that there was no cherub and warns Archangel Gabriel that a fallen angel has entered the paradise. He sends two strong angels to watch over Adam and Eve, and they find Satan disguised as a toad whispering in the ear of a sleeping Eve, tempting her dreams. They bring Satan, unwilling, to Gabriel. As Satan prepares to fight, God sends the sign of golden scales in the sky. Convinced the scales indicate a pending defeat, Satan flees back to hell. Milton again shows Satan as a somewhat sympathetic character. Sympathetic character inflicted by envy and doubt. It's no coincidence that this is the first time the reader has access to Satan's eternal thoughts, which conflict with his outward display of confidence. Eve, lovelier than to Adam, introduces us to the gentle couple's loving and compassionate relationship. Milton upends convention by introducing a domestic couple as epic and heroic figures. Eve's initial vanity evokes narcissism and her indirect experience from God. From her own love of her own husband shows that their marriage has an unequal partnership, and yet the central relationship is a loving source of mutual solace, and Eve has a well-rounded character and prominent voice that defy many contemporary and literary expectations of a wife's role. This is sort of interesting to me because right after my wedding to Beth, her best friend Robin, the maid of honor, gave us a CD about a documentary about traditional Christian weddings. And it's where the husband takes a bigger role in creating a safe home for the successful marriage. And the tradition is that Jesus prepares the kingdom of heaven to anyone willing to become enlightened and obedient to God. It's really not to say that that the woman's inferior, but together they have a divine partnership. So what if God creates the earth in the dinosaur era, which scientists believe was about 245 million years ago, and then 65 million years ago they became extinct, and the oldest human fossils are around 2.5 million years old. Again, I like to argue both evolution and creation occurred, and human beings evolved, and with the help of God, into thriving cultures. Moses is thought to be born at 1391 BC, and I believe that is the time that God took a participatory role in developing human culture. Some people may feel that this is really sort of a geocentric, and only God preferred these people in this one area in the world. And why not other cultures? You know, perhaps were there other gods? Actually, it doesn't really matter, because what happened then happened, and anyone can read the Bible and judge it for themselves. It's really not that difficult. You know, a Buddhist, for example, can incorporate the Bible into his or her religion. Messianic Jews believe in Jesus. Islam, however, is so diametrically opposed to the Bible that people cannot believe in both of those religions. So this entire story of Adam and Eve is set, I believe, in a metaphysical world, but I believe it was created to show that the earth is a paradise of Eden. It really was never lost. It exists, and it is up to humanity to preserve and protect it, even though it is filled with evil. God obviously knew that he was creating a world in a physical universe, which is inherently has evil in it. The story of Adam and Eve was simply provided in order for humanity as an ultimate goal that they would strive for. But an important point is that though all these years the paradise of earth has worked, I believe millions and millions of souls have become enlightened and moved to the next level. However, if humanity chooses to abandon protecting and preserving the paradise of earth, then it will no longer be able to serve its most important purpose that God intended it to be. Perhaps the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed by God for that exact reason. But what if we overpopulate the entire planet? So to the extent that all countries have the population density of China or India, and we use up all the resources. If that happens, I believe God will intervene, and perhaps some of the things written in the book of Revelation will come true. We can stop this by unifying and brainstorming effective and realistic solutions, and that is the main purpose of my book, to motivate that. Book number 5 picks up the next morning, where Eve recounts to Adam a troublesome dream in which an angel tempts her to eat from the tree of knowledge, offering a piece of fruit which will make her godlike. She woke up before she could eat it, and Adam was upset about the dream, but reassures her that she has the power to choose from right over wrong. God watches with pity on the effects on Adam and Eve. He sends the archangel Raphael to Adam as a friend and remind him that he is free to choose his own happiness, and to warn him of Satan's own plotting. Raphael advises Adam to always choose obedience to God, and to explain how disobedience can occur. He recounts the story of Satan's rebellion and how legions followed him in defiance of heaven. Adam and Eve are troubled by Eve's dream, and it was actually that she can't come up with the idea of disobeying God on her own. And since he could explain the burden of free will and free choice, Raphael's meeting with Adam heightens the tragedy of the fall and the distance between heaven and humanity. There is a political parallel between Satan's rebellion in heaven and what he sees as God's tyranny, and Milton's view of the English monarchy as a tyrannical power. Milton uses the angel Abdiel as the lone voice justifying the ways of God, and as such, he seems to be suggesting that humans' obedience or God is rightful and just. Obedience to God has a far different meaning to the obedience to the English monarchy. I know back when many rulers and churches acted as if they acted on behalf of God, but they were corrupt and evil. I truly believe that Milton provided a masterpiece in this book because it really expands on the meaning of the story of Adam and Eve in a good way. I also believe that it doesn't diverge from the true meaning which God intended, with a few exceptions. One is that I do not believe that the story makes women subordinate to men, and second, religious leaders will never take the place of God. If people truly viewed the earth as a vehicle for their own spiritual development, then this will motivate the masses towards the lofty and righteous goal of preserving and protecting the paradise of earth. In my opinion, today, the progressives, the deep state, and the globalists are being controlled by Satan's regime. Book number 6, Raphael continues to tell Adam that the story of Satan's rebellion in a way he will understand. He refers to Abdiel, who warns Satan of his imminent defeat and returns to God, who forgave him and praised his loyal obedience and resistance to evil. God then sends the angels Michael and Gabriel with Abdiel into battle against the rebel forces who have invaded heaven, justly ensuring heaven's army does not outnumber Satan's. The two armies face each other. Michael cuts the right side off of Satan, and his army retreats back to hell. Milton tells us that their wounded bodies heal, and Raphael tells the tale of war and strife by way of warning that Satan plots to seduce and tempt Adam into disobedience. Let is profit thee to have heard by terrible example the reward of disobedience. Firm might they have stood, yet fell. Remember and fear to transgress. I believe that heaven and hell are metaphysical worlds which we will never understand till after we die. Satan and his followers are spirits who refuse to follow God. Thus, they are unable to be conscious in heaven because they have never learned how to harness the power of love. We try to explain things as so does the book of Paradise Lost in the physical, something we cannot understand. But all this is in a metaphysical world. Hell lies within the physical body of the atoms and molecules which make up the earth. God created the earth, and there is infinite number of spiritual bodies which develop with the goal of a percentage becoming enlightened and graduating to the next level. Like the 1,000 eggs a fish will lay in the sea, we are spiritual embryos which only a percentage will become enlightened. In Book 7, Milton invokes a new muse to help him continue the story. Raphael explains to Adam that God created this new world and a new race after the expulsion of Satan. God decided to populate this world with a new type of being who are unlike angels and has to grow in goodness and virtue over time to enter heaven. Raphael tells God he sent his son, Jesus, down to in the chaos to create the earth in 6 days, showing his power to expand his dominion in the empty universe. Once finished, Jesus attached to heaven with a chain, which he uses to return to heaven. Please, God, rest on the seventh day. With Jesus, the primary agent of action, the creation story of Genesis put into a bigger story of celestial rebellion, making the drama of Eden a replay of earlier rebellions. Adam's curiosity foreshadows his temptation to know more by eating the fruit of the tree of knowledge. The direct connection God intends to make between humanity and heaven is severed by the fall of mankind. The only way to try and explain the metaphysical is to use terms other than the physical. For example, Jesus would not need a chain to return to heaven. In general, much of the book of Genesis, Paradise Lost, relies on metaphors, physical actions, and materials which represent the metaphysical. The fall of mankind began when Adam and Eve ate the forbidden fruit from the tree of knowledge. So then they would have to, all humanity, become enslaved in sin. What happened to Eden? This is where I believe we have misinterpreted the book of Genesis. Mankind has always been with sin for when we were created by God, and who created the earth, and he created the earth to support our lives. We are all are prone to sin simply because much we live inside bodies which are made up of atoms and molecules. Much of what the complex system of our bodies are going to do are based on the laws of physics. And the physical world of atoms and molecules in the world is a world of anarchy and madness. Our spiritual bodies have the power over this with the energy of love, and we are placed on earth in order to educate ourselves and to know God. As for Eden, it never was lost, and it is the planet. In Book 8, Raphael and Adam continue their conversation about the creation of the earth, and Adam puzzles between the relationship between the planets and the heavens. Raphael explains that God has purposely made some things about the universe a mystery, and Adam should be content with the knowledge that God allows him to have. Adam tells Raphael his first recollections as a man. He saw the vision of the Garden of Eden, and when he awoke, God spoke to him and warned him not to eat with experience, harmony, and fellowship, and God created Eve from Adam's rib, his likeness and other self. Adam is overjoyed and he loves her immediately. He tells Raphael that he finds Eve so wise and complete in herself that he has difficulty seeing her as inferior to him. Raphael accuses him of being too dazzled by Eve's beauty, and he leaves Adam a final warning about Satan's temptation and that the sin of disobeying God. This book shows that Adam's growing curiosity about his place in the world and what happens beyond paradise. Note Eve's absence in the conversation in the books of 5 through 8. This reflects their inherent difference in their creation stories. Adam talks directly to God, and Eve is created as Adam's fit help, and yet Eve is created from Adam's body, and in his unabashed adoration of her, hints at the choice he will make to forgo God, the Father, and adhere to his wife. I reject the story of Adam and Eve as being literal, that the earth was not created in 6 days, and Adam and Eve were not the only human beings who fell out of Eden to populate it. I believe that the earth was created 100 million years ago, and went through millions of years living things evolving and eventually leading to the thriving cultures in the Middle East. The story was provided in order for humanity to strive towards recreating and valuing the meaning of a paradise. The mistake we have made is this paradise not only exists in heaven, but is in fact also the planet Earth. If we are able to create a paradise over the entire Earth, then we'll achieve humanity's greatest struggle. We should put all of our efforts to live a righteous life, but that also includes working with others so that the vast majority preserves and protects the paradise of Earth. It is God's greatest creation, and there's nothing that would be more pleasing to God. In Book 9, Milton, as narrator, turns from friendly conversation between heavenly beings and mortals to the tragic notes of human disobedience and fall. It is a tale more heroic than those of Virgil and Homer. With guile, Satan sneaks back into Eden and possesses a sleeping serpent. Adam and Eve awake in the morning to discuss the work they need to do. He suggests that they work separately to get more work done, but Adam wants her close by, and he is now weary of Satan. After a lengthy exchange, they separate, leaving Adam concerned. Satan follows Eve, plotting the destruction of all humanity through her. Satan watches Eve and is so captivated by her beauty that he rethinks his plan. But back on attack, he flatters her with the forbidden fruit and leads her to the tree of knowledge. She knows that she must obey God's law or die, but she later reasons that the snake ate and lived, and Satan's eloquence reassures Eve that God would never punish her for eating fruit, and his flattery plays on her desire for greater independence and knowledge. She plucks the fruit and takes a bite. Now fallen, Eve debates whether to offer Adam the fruit. Eating it has been raised up to his level, and she treasures the idea of being his equal. She finds Adam and explains she has eaten the forbidden fruit and her eyes have been opened. He knows that they are lost, but still Adam resolves to eat the fruit because he does not want to live without her. We are told, and Adam was not deceived, but overcome with female charm. Adam finds the fruit and Eve amazing, and they should have enjoyed these delightful powers earlier. They take their newfound knowledge into the woods, inflamed by carnal desire of lust rather than marital love. They wake up later with a new awareness of sin and their loss of paradise. They recognize their nakedness and cover themselves up in shame. Adam and Eve argue and blame each other in admitting no fault. This climactic book went into high epic tragedy with the domestic dispute, and our main heroic characters are married laborers who work in a garden. Of course, they are the first humans representative of all humankind, and like Satan, they fall. Satan's relatively easy seduction of Eve might conform to unflattering ideas of women and wives, but her choice of knowledge over obedience is not strictly gender, and she shares with Satan the central theme of Milton's epic, disobedience. What's interesting to me in Book 9 is this dichotomy between a man and a woman, and Adam is basically in charge to take direction from God, whereas Eve takes direction from Adam. Why does Milton make Eve inferior to Adam? I do not think that it does. Humans evolved with men experiencing more physical stress than women. As an aside, it's been shown in science that this is true. You can see it with other species of plants and animals. When I was in my 20s, I remember growing marijuana and reading Ed Rosenthal's book, and it described how female plants get stressed out and they turn into male plants. The trick is to weed out the male plants so the female plants don't get pollinated. But I believe all married couples should think of themselves as a team, and neither better than one or the other. Men are just better to take on more stress, and women are better at harnessing the power of love. There is something to be said about the beauty and harmony of this relationship, and we should not be pretend that women can be men or vice versa. Again, I believe that the story of Adam and Eve was handed down to an already developed humanity on the planet Earth. They certainly may have came from heaven or from the metaphysical Garden of Eden, and they began growing the civilization of humanity, which some scholars say was 4500 BC. I believe we again can say that both evolution and creation happened, and if this is true, then humanity would have evolved to what was in 4500 BC, and God sent Adam and Eve to the earth to an already established human culture. Remember, early in my book, Raphael instructs Adam that God intends to create a new species of man on earth. So Adam and Eve were not the sole human beings which started all of humanity. You might say that why should we really believe in Milton and his book Paradise Lost? And I think it should be taken seriously, and it has. Perhaps God intended him to write it. It would have not received such acclaim and had not absorbed great thinkers on the subject over time. It truly remains a true classic. In book 10, God already knows that Satan perverted Eve and Eve perverted her husband. God did not intervene because Adam and Eve were fully equipped with strength and free will to resist the wiles of any foe. He reassures the guardian angels that he allowed Satan to sneak up into the Garden of Eden without condoning it. He sends his son, Jesus, to pronounce his judgment on Adam and Eve. Jesus calls them out of hiding, and they are ashamed and embarrassed. Jesus asks them about eating from the tree of knowledge, and Adam admits that while Eve ate it first, he did not refuse it when she offered it to him. Jesus points out that Adam placed Eve above God and obeying his wife rather than the divine command. Eve says that the serpent did not eat it. Did not I eat it? Without delay, Jesus condemned the serpent to not have legs to slither on their bellies rather than to walk upright. Jesus then renders judgment on Eve to suffer the pain of childbirth and to submit to her husband's will and rule, and Adam's judgment is to be forced into agriculture and toil and grow food in a cursed ground. After delivering these sentences, Jesus takes pity on them and gives them clothes. Meanwhile, the angels of sin and death have built an bridge to earth and meet Satan at the edge of paradise. Satan is delighted, and he sends sin and death to spread their bane and infect the earth. And Satan returns to pandemonium, boasting of his success. But instead of hearing applause, he hears this great hiss as Jesus transforms all of Satan's followers into serpents. The forbidden tree appears in hell, but when they try to devour the fruit, it turns to dust. God sees the devastation of earth, of sin and death, and he foretells the final victory of his son and the renewal of all things. God condemns his angels to change the earth to reflect the fall of mankind, to make the weather less pleasant, and creating discord between animals and man. Adam and Eve come more to understand their fallen condition. They argue but mutually agree to stop fighting about who is at fault. They both confess, beg pardon, and humble themselves before God. This book and the just, merciful judgment of God is the culmination of Milton's stated intention to justify the ways of God to man. God's removal of the stairway to heaven exemplifies the changes that reflect the fall of man. Rather than connected to heaven, the earth is now bridged to hell. Eve's now forced subjugation to Adam also reflects a situational irony. Where she has hoped to be his equal, she is doomed to forever be subordinate to his will. So, in my mind, everything about this story was intentional from God in order to create the earth and humanity. It wasn't like Adam and Eve got sent to earth just because they messed up by eating the forbidden fruit. This is all planned by God. I believe that but in such a way as to create the earth and as a learning center for spiritual beings. In the story of Adam and Eve, whether as a fictional story or it actually existed, was essential to the development of human civilization. Eden clearly seems to be in the metaphysical realm, and perhaps Adam and Eve were transported to Earth like from the Starship Enterprise transporter room. Or perhaps Adam and Eve just suddenly appeared out of their metaphysical bodies into their physical bodies. I believe anyone who does not become enlightened during their lives and their spirits will spend time in hell and then reincarnated and given another chance. Hell, it perhaps is not such a horrible place, but it's a place of madness and anarchy of the physical universe with no spiritual control. The memory of your prior life and lives will be lost forever, but if you are able to live a righteous life and become enlightened, then the memory of your life will remain for eternity. In book number 11, God hears Adam and Eve's prayers for forgiveness. Jesus convinces God to show them mercy, and Jesus tells God that he will sacrifice himself in death for their sins. The archangel Michael escorts Adam and Eve out of Eden. They are shocked and worry that they will no longer be able to talk to God. Michael confronts them and tells them that they can talk to God anywhere and any time. While Eve is sleeping, Michael talks to Adam about future generations, beginning with the murder of his son Abel by his other son Cain. Michael also warns him against godlessness and sexual temptation. He then shows him the story of Noah, whose ark contains the only survivors of people and animals of a deadly flood. Adam feels anguish over what he sees, but he is heartened that his offspring will continue to survive through Noah. Eve is excluded by knowing about these visions, and again, Milton justifies this idea that men have a role of talking directly to God and that they share this information to women. He shows rational for punishment and also renewing hope in times of despair. Despair is precisely what corrupted Satan and made it impossible for him to repent. God wants to ensure that Adam and Eve do not fall prey to it. Obedience in the last two books concludes the epic which started with rebellion and defiance. I think you cannot measure the vital importance of the story of Adam and Eve because it lays the foundation that people need to realize they are above the animal kingdom, and the marriage of the man and woman and the protection of the nuclear family is vital not only to the survival of humanity, but the ability to people to become enlightened. Adam and Eve's destiny was all planned out by God. God obviously wants people to live in paradise for a reason. It provides the inspiration and sense of well-being for people to live righteous and happy life than to become enlightened. This applies both to the Eden and to the entire earth. In the final book, number 12, Archangel Michael continues telling Adam about the future in the story of Nimrod and the Tower of Babel. Nimrod was a tyrant by ordering his citizens to build a tower to reach heaven. This disobedience led God to interfere and stop the tower from ever being built. God punished humans by forcing them to speak different languages when before they easily spoke one language. Michael also spoke about stories of Abraham, Jacob, Joseph, and Moses. Moses invents laws from the commandments from God, and Michael tells Adam that the people need these laws because otherwise they do not know how to behave justly. He also tells that the story of God's only son will be transformed into a human being, and he will be named Jesus, and he will ultimately die as ransom for the sins of humanity. Jesus will then rise from the dead, overcoming Satan's corruption. The risen Jesus will spread the message to humanity that if they are obedient to God, they will be rewarded with eternal life in heaven. Adam is relieved to hear this, as he has feared that death was their ultimate punishment. Adam sees this as superior outcome to have never having sinned. Michael finally escorts Adam and Eve out of Eden, and they are reassured they will be someday they will be with God again. Even if Eden is either a metaphysical or a physical place, God had made it, and he preserved and protected it as a paradise. So if the people preserve and protect the paradise of earth, then they are doing God's work. I've always been confused and really never understood why Jesus died for our sins, till I started educating myself, reading the Bible, and thinking more about what it meant, and then eventually writing my book. But back in February's episode, titled Our Biological Robot Bodies, I believe we're all prone to sin because we have this inherent reality that the atoms and molecules that make up our very complex bodies, the system of our bodies, are going to do what they're going to do based on the laws of physics. But we must have a spiritual existence that is in control, but not 100% of the time. We exist to educate our spiritual bodies by learning how to overcome to exist without our physical bodies. So I think that Jesus, the only possible way to show this to all of humanity was to come to earth as a human, build a big following, and showing the ways of God, and willingly go to the cross, die, and then become resurrected. So we showed all that, yes, but you obviously are prone to sin to the fact that you existed in your physical bodies. However, you can simply follow me after death into the kingdom of God by simply living the righteous life and harnessing the power of love. That's what I believe. I don't know. I think I'll end this segment here, but I think you get the general idea that I believe that our paradise is not lost. It is the paradise of the entire planet Earth, and we got a big job ahead of preserving and protecting it. The next episode is titled Mission Possible. Paradise over the entire earth. And then I'm going to go into more specifics how I believe that we can all achieve this very lofty goal. Thanks for listening, and please share this podcast if you enjoyed the content.